So here's where I'm at right now.
Okay.
I woke up with an old man neck, and I've never had that before, and it seems like I've crossed the Rubicon into old man territory.
Are you talking about pain? Are you talking about sort of just the gelatinous?
It's an old man stiffness, like the kind of stiffness you'd get if there's like a storm a-brewing.
Sure. But like, well, is there? Did you check?
So far, no, but who knows? I mean, if my neck is saying there is, there must be.
Here's what I know about you, Russ. I'm going to tie two things together, like house... Sure. Mud. You ever see that show, House Mud? No. It's about a doctor who solves crimes.
Mean doctor
solves crimes was the Japanese title. Anyway, I want to solve this crime for you. I know you beat The Witcher on your Switcher, right?
Yes.
You've been looking down at it. You got Switch neck, or as I call it, gamer neck. Me and some of the other game chiropractors that keep our esports teams in line. I am, of course, the gamer's doctor, Dr. Justin McElroy. I help with gamer neck, gamer thumb, gamer butt, and all the different gamer deformities. I'm not supposed to say deformities anymore. My secretary keeps telling me this. Sorry, administrative assistant. Damn it, this is hard. This 2020 culture. I just want to fix gamer necks. You know what the biggest hazard of fixing gamer neck is?
What, Dustin?
Beard burn. Beard burn is the big thing you gotta watch out for.
Start to play the music.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game 30 fucking years ago.
I'm Griffin McElroy, and yep, it's happening.
My name is Russ Martin, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we discuss the latest and greatest in pop culture games that have inspired us, helped us to grow as people, to become better parents, if I may be so bold.
Yeah.
And the latest and greatest in gaming. This week, we are sans Chris Plant. He is out on assignment.
He did fall into a big magic toy chest and get turned into a toy. And we're trying to fix it. Like, we're trying to figure it out.
I have to say, he wasn't that far off to begin with. So I don't think it was that much of a stretch.
We are going to be talking about the video game Super Mario Brothers 3.
Justin pointed out this was pretty much Chris Plant's idea.
Plant said, why don't you guys talk about this old ass game? And anyway, I won't be around, but I do have enjoy playing and talking about this old video game.
Well, we're so enthusiastic about it.
Oh yeah.
It's Super Mario Bros. It's a very good game. We were originally going to talk about Dreams this week, which we did not get. As far as I know, nobody's getting code to.
Trying to get it was a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, yes. They've converted some of the beta players, which I was not a beta player. Maybe I should have been a beta player.
Oh, I was. See, I didn't even check for that. But yeah, but that comes out on Friday. I still want to talk about that at some point because it's a really, like, what I played in the beta was so strange, and the shit that I keep seeing like go viral on Twitter of like, look at this photorealistic CGI people have made. Like, that seems wild. But for now, let's talk about Super Mario Brothers the third.
Ugh.
So it's why are we talking old. About this?
Yeah.
Why, how old is it?
The 30th anniversary of this game, of its North American release.
Yeah, right. That seems very Western-centric. The game actually came out in Japan in 1988. Which is 32 years ago.
Right.
But it came out in North America this week, February 9th, 1990. And that's certainly when I knew about it, because I didn't know about Japan back then.
Do you know why there was a delay?
They ran out of ding-dong.
In that period in the late 80s, there was a ROM chip shortage. Like, getting enough games like manufactured in that period, there was a worldwide shortage, so they held off.
It's such as Rob the Robot was eating all the ROM chips.
He needed them for power. It's such a strange story that I was not aware of until sort of preparing for this episode. I did not know about the ROM chip shortage. That seems like a really wild reason for a thing not to, a major video game from the biggest video game publisher on the planet to like not put out their shit in America for 2 whole years is a wild reason. But also that it was like, they saw the opportunity to make a fucking movie a movie all about Super Mario Brothers 3 and the Nintendo line of products. And that is where the wizard sort of came from. I did not realize what was the chicken and what was the egg in that scenario, which is to say, like, I did not realize that they were like, hey, Nintendo, was it Paramount or Universal went to Nintendo like, hey, so we think it'd be cool to make a movie about all your great video games and all the fun characters therein. And Nintendo was like, ooh, this is a good opportunity for us to bring Super Mario Brothers 3 stateside. And it's like, this is what you were waiting for? I get it was a different sort of gaming landscape back then, but like, holy shit, guys.
They needed a news peg. It was important.
Yeah, or you could just release Super Mario Brothers 3, the sequel to, you know, the biggest video game on the planet. But here we are.
Wait, are we talking about Mario 2 as the biggest video game on the planet?
No, we should also, for listeners who aren't, like, aware of that, also, there's a sort of, like, wild, like, Final Fantasy 6-3 thing that happened with Super, what we call Super Mario Brothers The Lost Levels, was Super Mario Brothers 2 in Japan, and Super Mario Brothers 2 in America was, oh, shit, I can never.
Doki Doki Panic.
Doki Doki Panic, which is like.
Russ and I have a great video about this on
YouTube.
We do.
You should search
Super
Mario Brothers 2 history.
It's fantastic.
We are going to talk about The Wizard in the latter half of the show, but I did want to talk specifically about Super Mario Brothers 3, given the anniversary. And we talked a little bit about the ROM shortage, but I want to know, did you guys know there's like a pretty weird ass plot going on in this game? It never really occurred to me because you sort of just like take Mario shit for granted. Like, hey, there's like weird toad creatures and their Goombas are walking around. Like, it's just weird by default.
Right.
And they don't really present the story. Like, there's very little like actual text in these games. But,
I think that's less true in Super Mario Brothers 3. I think like because you get like the little cutscene at the end of each world with Toad like giving a little monologue.
Sure, but there isn't like a setup really. All you really get is the like the curtains opening up and you're sort of like thrown into it, right?
Well, it's all in the manual, right? You have to read the manual to get the story.
It is all in the manual. And I wanted to like read a little bit of the manual.
Oh, cool.
So this is directly from the manual. The Mushroom Kingdom has been a peaceful place thanks to the brave deeds of Mario and Luigi. The Mushroom Kingdom forms an entrance to the Mushroom World where all is not well. Now, this really blew my mind because, okay, so Mushroom Kingdom, we picture the Mushroom Kingdom. Everything in Mario happens in the Mushroom Kingdom, right? It's like a giant world of Mushroom Kingdom shit going on in there. But no, there's a world.
This is suggesting that there is a whole sort of extended universe that the Mushroom Kingdom is like the doorway into.
Yeah, it's the Mushyverse.
It's the Mushyverse, and the Mushroom Kingdom is like the wardrobe to Narnia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Precisely right.
Interesting.
So yeah, that kind of blew my mind, and then we dive into the like plot that Bowser has, which is to send his 7 children to make mischief by transforming all of the kings in this world into animals.
Right. And that's funny. Like, Bowser's got me busting up on this one, because this is just funny. You sent your kids to turn the kings into dogs? Bowser, you're fucking wild about this one, bud. But here's the thing. After Doki Doki Panic, which was Super Mario Brothers 2, I think this is maybe one of the tamer plots, which is that one is like a toad, a big monster frog man has Inception taken over your dreams and is causing nightmares.
Except.
Uh-oh.
Super Mario Brothers 3?
Yeah.
Is all a play.
Oh, that's a good point, Justin.
Super Mario Brothers 2 is framed as just a dream to get around the fact that it's so buck wild.
Yeah.
It's framed as just a dream. Super Mario Brothers 3 is a stage play. There's the curtain going up at the beginning. That's why the blocks look like they've been bolted on to the backgrounds. Why it looks like a exiting stage right at the end of each level.
Is this headcanon or is this like...
No. This is, well, it was a fan theory for literally 30 years until, or 25 years, I guess, until 2015, Miyamoto confirmed that it was a play. I mean, that's the aesthetic. That's why stuff is like hanging from wires a lot of time rather than just floating and stuff like that. It is a stage play. That is the narrative of this. So... 2 is a dream, 3 is a stage play. the only canonical thing is Super Mario Brothers 1 and then World. It just jumps straight to World. So if you're following the main narrative, that's why a lot of the novels fill in these gaps between.
That to makes try sense. To fill in that's some why of the I haven't been able there. To follow it. I just haven't right. kept up.
Yeah.
Did they get the Halo guy to write those?
They did. Yeah. It's Super Mario Brothers. The Fall of Reach is one of my favorites. Juice, help me out here. I have pretty bad sort of just memory recall skills, in general. I remember very clearly playing, we had an NES at our house. I remember very clearly playing Mario Brothers 1. I feel like I don't have as many sort of like crystallized memories about us playing Super Mario Brothers 3. Like, I know we had it, but I don't remember it being sort of the like staple, like Mondo important game in our house, like the like Super Mario Brothers 1 was. Am I misremembering that?
No, it's weird actually. I think this was maybe in sort of an ebb in terms of like our gaming, because like the times I can remember playing Super Mario Brothers 3, it's always at a friend's house.
Yeah.
And I have like vivid memories of Super Mario Brothers 3, and this is something like I think we'll talk more about in emails, but if you ask people about Super Mario Brothers 3, and I don't know why it's this one specifically, you know, there's probably some other old NES games that would get the same treatment, but people have vivid memories of, I asked Sydney, who's not, my wife is not a big video game person, if she remembered playing Super Mario Brothers 3. And she immediately rattled off this story about growing up in Georgia, and there were kids across the street that had Super Mario Brothers 3. And she and her sisters would go over and invite them out to play. And then 10 minutes into the playing outside would start complaining about getting hot and maybe they should do something indoors just as like a back door to get into Super Mario Brothers 3. Yeah.
That's so good.
Basically, like if you ever seen the Apple and Onion episode where they hang out with Hamburger to use his trampoline.
Sure.
Basically, exactly
like
that.
It's a lot like that.
I mean, I remember like sleepovers of us like obsessing about, and I think this is a factor of like the world we were in that didn't have outside access to the world. Every little weird nook and cranny of this game, and there are many that yes. just don't make in. I mean, like, why? Why is sometimes there's a floating spade card with an N on it that you go into and there's a match game? Like, why? It seemed bizarre. And not being able to, like, verify this stuff that other people will see this stuff online made all this stuff really magical. And I think it like really codified it in my brain.
I remember being over at my neighbor Courtney's house, and the first time we got to World 4, which is Giant Land, being like, the game done changed, Courtney. Everything's so fucking big. Everything's so much bigger than it should be. Yeah, it's so strange because, yeah, I have memories like that, but like, I feel like Super Mario Brothers 3 occupies this strange place, and I think that I can sort of codify this by my experience with Super Mario Maker 1 and 2, which I've played like a lot of. I love those games. But whenever I make levels, I tend not to favor Super Mario Brothers 3 like palette, right? Like, and I feel like that's true of a lot of the community. Just sort of anecdotally speaking, looking at the slate of like most popular levels or the levels that are always in like the most played hot levels right now mm-hmm. sort of playlist. And this is, you know, there's other stuff affecting this, right? Like Super Mario Brothers 1 palette has like the Zelda power up. So like in Super Mario Brothers 3 doesn't have that. There's like differences between who gets what. But I feel like just again, anecdotally speaking, like Super Mario Brothers 3 doesn't have the heat necessarily on that specific platform, where it's just then like a question of game feel and game mechanics and game aesthetic when, you know, ostensibly.
Yeah, do you think it's because it's like a middle, because obviously people love Super Mario World, like the world palette, right? Like
right,
people make
yeah.
a lot of levels with
well,
that.
Well, Super Mario Brothers World, or Super Mario World has like all of the tech, right?
So
it
yeah,
has,
sure.
You
all
can pick up P-switches and do all kinds of like crazy shit with that, which 3
I do
does not
think,
like.
Though, that part of it might be just this element of it being kind of a weird middle ground between the two generations, where like if you're right. trying to make like a true retro level, you would use Mario 1 graphics because that makes sense. And then if you're going to make like more of a next gen thing, you're going to leap right ahead to World. That middle ground with 3 does seem weird, and maybe that's what it is. But I do still have a lot of fondness for it. The thing that always jumps in my mind, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of reader mail talking about it, is that fucking white block. That white block, the fact that you could duck behind this white block and get behind
yes.
the scenery, to transfer yourself through the world without hitting anything. And that was designed. I don't know why it was designed that way, why it is still in the game.
Well, let's talk about sort of the spaghetti at the wall approach of Super Mario Brothers 3.
It does seem designed, though. Like, I don't... It doesn't feel like it's random.
It's not random. Like, it's not unintentional. Right. It's, like, how you access in 1-4 the, like, secret backstage level where you get the warp whistle. Like, no, it's obviously warp intentional. I'm talking more about, is it level 3? Oh, yes, you're right.
Which is weird, by the way, that I instantly, almost muscle memory, hopped up on that white block, crouched down, went and got my fucking whistle.
Right.
I knew exactly where that was.
To read about the development of this game, like, it was very, like, open doors approach, where Miyamoto, you know, any ideas that people had, like, he was willing to entertain, because his, like, game development theory was, like, it takes a whole village to make a good video game. And, like, reading about that, now it starts to make sense why this game has just so much shit in it. Like, even compared to Super Mario World, which came out a generation later, like, you think about, you get the little cards at the end of each level, and if you match 3, you get a bunch of extra 1-ups. You get the little item palaces where you get to choose from the different treasure chests that have items in it, and you can use those items on the world map to start a level from the beginning. You have the weird matching game. You have the weird little mini-boss fights on the map. You have
just the world map alone.
The world map alone has, like, yeah, locked doors and pipes that you can go in. There's the whole sort of, like, P running mechanic, like,
yeah, the speed. There's a fucking the speed P-wing mechanic, meter
the speed
in
meter.
A platforming game. Like, what?
It's a there's like there's so many things. Like, there's so many different sort of elements to this game, and I think, like, I love this game. Obviously, like, it feels silly to, like, talk about our feelings about Super Mario Brothers 3 because it's obviously, like, as classic as a classic can get. But it's those things aren't especially cohesive. Like, it's not, it does not come together to form.
Well, that's Mario writ large, though. It's only cohesive because it's been, like, you've been subjective to it since you were a baby. Like, yeah. I mean, jumping on mushrooms is absolutely buck wild. I wish to God I could go back and just be an adult experience, like, watching my kids, like, are you jumping on living mushrooms? What the fuck is happening? Go back to watching Sesame Street.
I kind of get Tipper Gore at that point. All her complaints about video games. It makes
sense. They are dangerous. You know what's weird? And this is more like, I don't have a great point about this or anything, but it is interesting. Griffin talked about, like, a generation later, right? Mario Brothers 3 came out in North America, as we said, February 12th, which is the day we're recording this, 1990, right? Super Mario Brothers World came out in North America August 23rd, 1991. That's like 18 months later, basically. I mean, it's, like, so close, and it's so close to the release of the SNES. And you don't really see this anymore. Like, this was designed as a grand farewell to the NES. Like, this was going to be, like, the last big... leave it all on the mat.
I do think you see that, though. Like, you look at, like, PlayStation 4, for example, has, like, Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima are essentially, like, the last.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, actually.
So, and I think each generation does have that game that is, like, well, they just literally yanked anything they could possibly yank out of this hardware. I think God of War 2 came out in, like, the last gasp of the PlayStation 2. So, like, they really do,
but,
I think.
But
what's
wild to
think about, though, is that this game comes out in 90, and then Super Mario Brothers World comes out 18 months later. Now, obviously, there's some weirdness there because the Japanese release was in 1990 of November.
88.
No, the Super Mario Brothers World is 1990 in Japan, and it's, you know, 88 in
that there
Japan.
Could be that
so
big of a
Super Mario Brothers 3.
That there could be that big of a gap between international releases is like
that's
is,
yeah it, that's what's I mean you look at the SNES release calendar internationally, it's wild. I mean, it would never have, like, it's 90 in Japan, November of 1990 in Japan, August of 91 in North America, April of 92 in the UK, and Brazil gets it in August of 1993. It is absolutely, like, it would never ever happen way.
And then
it's wild.
And then you have fucking Kirby's Adventure on the NES that came out in 1993, a full 3 years after the SNES. This was an NES game, and it came out 3 years after the After it came out after Dreamland, right? Which was the Game Boy game. That one came out first in, I think, like 91 or maybe even 1990. And Kirby's Adventure comes out in 1993. And they're like, let's not put it on the new shit. We put that on the old shit because everybody has the old shit. It was a different way of doing business back then. And I think it's only strange looking at it through the lens of today. But that's why, like, I think import sort of culture was a, I don't know, it felt like a bigger deal back then than it does these days. I played all of it, by which I mean I played 1-1 through 1-3 and then the first castle, and then I played through World 8. No, that's not true. I dipped in through, I made sure to hop into World 4 because, you know,
I did the same thing for my first run and then went back and like realized that I've been skipping a lot of these levels for many, many years. So I'm going to go back and see some of them. That difficulty spike, though, if you are like some smart ass kid who's like, I'm just going to warp to level 8 and see what that's all about. All of a sudden, you're on a fucking pirate ship with cannons that's shooting fire and dudes are throwing wrenches at you. You just went from like gently sloping down hills and hitting red turtles into like a fucking World War One of Super Mario games.
Those airships, man, that was like the first time in a Mario game where it went from being like kind of representational, but like it was artistic, right? You didn't really get exactly what environment this was sort of representing. Like even the castles were like very simple in earlier games. This was like, I'm in the fucking sky, like I'm flying, and like shit's getting real. Like this was the first time that I felt truly teleported into a game, which again, if you're a kid or didn't grow up with this stuff, like it feels stupid to look at this and be like, how could this be? Like you've got VR and pterodactyls flying past your head. But
yeah, but
was like a huge step.
It's not hard. I actually played this on the Switch, on the NES, like whatever it is, the Nintendo Online subscription thing that you get that has all the NES games on it.
Virtual console.
No. I had not like fucked around with that before. It's cool as hell. Like it is a really cool way to play those games. I didn't realize this, but at any point you can hold down the triggers and it will let you rewind. And like go back and play shit again, which is like a really, really neat way of like handling save states in emulation. But like go back and play like, you know, games that came out before it on the NES. And it is a remarkable leap from an aesthetic perspective, from a design perspective. Like it is the set pieces that they accomplished, like the airship is like, unlike it beats the ever loving shit out of like everything that came before it. It is really impressive. I think the reason why I would rather play Super Mario Brothers 1 or World, not 2. I'm not a big fan of 2, is that this game has a heavy dependence on side scrolling or auto scrollers, like the airship levels.
That's true.
World 8 is just like there's a handful of not auto scrollers thrown in, and then you get like the Bowser's Castle maze and then like the you know the usual sort of Mario staple shit. But before that it's like 6 auto scrolling levels and it's not fun. Like that's not fun for me. Like I do not obviously they're scattered out throughout the rest of the game as well, but like being told how fast I'm allowed to go in the Mario game is like not an enjoyable experience for me. And this game, more than any other Mario game, it is just like nonstop.
How do you think Mario conceptualizes an auto-scrolling level, like as a man?
That's got to be a representation of his own will, right? I mean, his will is the only thing pushing him forward. Even when he physically doesn't want to, his like will to succeed is driving him onward.
You know? He has to poop.
Interesting. So
anyway, Griffin just fucking killed Super Mario Brothers 3. This is our segment on site where Griffin takes down a classic, just blows him right out of the water. I guess if you're looking for something to play on the Switch, NES store, fucking Crystalis just came out.
Now let's talk Crystalis. That
game fucking beats ass. How have we not gotten a reboot of Crystalis?
It's wild to me. We get all the like the Mana series, like the Secret of Mana, like all those games. Crystalis is like obviously such a fucking blood predecessor to that shit, and it gets no respect. It's a good ass game.
Hey, and what about MDK? Shiny makes this fucking great game. You're a guy with a coil suit. And also in the second one, you could be a scientist and a dog.
And Mr. Mosquito. Where's Mr. Mosquito?
Thank you. Irritating stick. irritating bit more like. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Chris Plant would never let us talk about Mr. Mosquito.
Hey, it's me. Hey, I'm a character. Hey, I'm a character. Anybody want to say yes?
Yes.
And engage me?
Yes.
Engage my character?
Yeah.
What's going on, character?
My name is Ricky Boffo.
Oh, Ricky.
Ricky Boffo. I'm a Hollywood big shot, okay?
No kidding.
Good.
Yeah, I got licensed properties out the wazoo.
What do you got?
I'm bringing them back. Yeah. What do I got?
Mm. Yeah, what's on the menu?
What do I got? You ever heard of a little game called Mortal Kombat? I have a very similar property, Eternal Champions. I'm bringing that to the big screen. That's gonna be huge. I don't even need to tell you. It's amazing.
Hey, is this our most inaccessible episode yet, do you think, to a younger audience?
Listen.
Ricky, what else you got?
The kids are gonna love this. Well, I got one that I want you boys to work on.
What is it?
Well, let me tell you. Thank you, Justin. Well, I want you boys to make a new version of the Wizard. You seen this movie about a special little boy who's great at video games and Fred Savage takes him halfway across the country to compete in
Video Armageddon.
Video Armageddon. And that's the competition at the end, and we're going to have a new unreleased game.
Ricky, how did you secure the rights to The Wizard? I'm surprised because it is such a well-known and loved property.
Nobody wanted it. Everybody's too obsessed with Quibi. Nobody wants something. Nobody wants something feature linked anymore. Everybody says, Ricky Boffo, bring me a Quibi. I'm not making a Quibi. I make big pictures for big stars and big boys in the seats. Yeah. All right? So, my challenge for you. Thank you. Please get to it. My challenge for you is to make me a new wizard. You got all the money in the world. You can cast anybody you want to, and we'll get an equivalent star. If not that original star, an equivalent level talent.
Okay.
And I want to hear the big ideas, boys. Ricky Boffo.
Okay.
Just Ricky. Fax it to my man, and he'll get it to me. All right, because I gotta go do a thing for a guy with a thing.
Okay, we'll work on it, Ricky.
We're gonna do
See
our
Ricky.
Best.
Ricky.
Wow, challenge wizard. Accepted.
Yes.
We have to remake The Wizard. Which, when did this movie come out?
I mean, 1989.
1989, the world had not even seen Super Mario Bros. 3.
Right.
Well, I guess Japan had.
This was... yeah, this was like...
The world.
This was holidays 1989 is when this came out. So a couple months before Mario 3 dropped in America.
Yeah, I saw it in the movie theaters. I was given a collectible card, which I think has to be a crucial element of the re-release. So we need to give something
some
for
sort
free.
Of collectible things. So let's start unpacking it. We got Jimmy Woods. If you haven't seen the film,
he's James still alive. Woods. He could come back.
James Woods.
James Woods
he's
is a little,
a little
bit
political dodgy.
Yeah, a little controversial.
Listen, but you know, he'll just bring that fire. He'll bring that just, social fire.
He's just asking questions. Literally. Jimmy Woods is a video game wunderkind. His sister died, and he has PTSD, and like he gets kidnapped, I guess, by Fred Savage. And
not kidnapped. He wants to go.
Okay. Just by like reiterating the plot, you are creating a very dark film that to re-envision the wizard as, because it's like,
are we talking about a sequel or a reboot?
I think it's a reboot.
He didn't
I think
say
we got to go reboot. I don't. Well, reboot. Here's what I would do: reboot, but like subtle Easter eggs indicating that this existed in the same universe.
You got to get Fred Savage to host Video Armageddon. Oh, excuse me.
Video Armageddon.
You got to get Fred Savage to host it.
I actually, Justin, I just got a letter from the lawyers, and if we cast anybody other than Will Arnett in that role, we all go to jail. So
he's busy with Lego Masters.
Yeah. I fuck with that show, by the way. Anyway.
It ain't bad.
It ain't bad. So we got to have little child who's good as hell at video games, and then two slightly older children who do take that child on a madcap sort of adventure across the country in a light kidnapping spree. At some point, they do need to interact with the bad guy, and the bad guy has to have, in this film, it was Lucas, who had the power glove. And that made the children afraid. This Nintendo gaming peripheral made these three children extremely afraid. And so we got to find a way to recapture that juice. And then it all has to be sort of brought to you by Nintendo. Or, I mean, let's be honest, boys. Epic Games would front a chunk of change for this one.
I mean, is it Fortnite? Is that what Video Armageddon is?
No, they
I
don't need to push Fortnite, right? Like, this pushed Super Mario Bros. 3. This could just be, like, the Epic Games Store. And they would give us $500 trillion to just, like...
And the challenge is, like, navigating it? Yeah. Is that the thing?
It's being an international customer and trying to buy one fucking game on the Epic Games Store.
What is the white block reveal of the Epic Games Store? There needs to be an Easter egg.
It would be some sort of, like...
You can use shekels.
Some sort of usability sort of... component to it. So yeah, and then we gotta have the Video Armageddon at the end. So what's
okay, so I think Billie Eilish is popping off right now, and given that we're on Spotify,
that's
it
good.
Seems like
and that's
like
a one-to-one Jenny Lewis substitution, I feel. Yeah, like Jenny Lewis, extremely talented musician, former front person for Rilo Kiley. Mm-hmm. just an incredible turn in that film, really great.
Yeah.
Fred Savage cameo seems essential. If we can't get him, we'll get Ben. Don't worry about it.
Sure. So for the kid, for like the expert, wanted to ask, what is Alf up to these days?
I don't think Alf could be in it.
Why?
Yeah, Alf, I don't think he's going to be in this one.
You think it's just an age thing, or you think he's too big for it?
Well, Alf has already guaranteed, we've given him certain assurances that he will be playing Beau Bridges' part. Of Jimmy's dad.
I thought he could do young. Like, I thought he could pull off like a 13, 14.
Well,
to be honest.
No, he can't. He's Alf. So he will be playing Beau Bridges' part. Sure. Christian Slater's a little too fucking hot to trot right now. Yeah. So I don't know if we get him back.
We got to dial that down.
As the cool older brother. That movie's so wild. Do you remember in that movie how Beau Bridges and Christian Slater repair their relationship as father and son through the magic of the Nintendo Entertainment System that they play while staying in hotel rooms while searching for their kidnapped family member? This movie beats ass. We need the hook. Let's start at the end and work our way backwards.
Okay,
Boffa would like that. What's the game in the... What is the Video Armageddon, like, game? What are we talking about? Esports is too easy.
Yeah, esports is too easy. I think it's too on the nose. I don't think we can do, like, anything too retro because we don't want to alienate people.
No.
But I do think there is like a pretty popular game that hasn't gotten enough shine.
What's that?
And that is Candy Crush.
That would be, I mean, King still got that King money.
Yeah.
But at this point, I don't think it's getting enough media attention.
You know, it'd be a fun challenge for us three as filmmakers.
Mm.
All of the like most profitable games, the biggest games, the hottest games on Twitch these days, I think we can all agree, are all universally super fucking boring. And so what would be cool is if it was like auto chess. And we had to make that just sort of the hot, exciting, thrilling conclusion. And then like, you know, Fred Savage can be in the audience and like Jimmy's up there and he's like getting his ass beat by the boy with the Steel Battalion controller. Like, what's the hot game peripheral?
The Steel Battalion controller. That's a hot new.
Yeah, well, it's for the new Steel Battalion. And so, like, he's like, oh no. But then he pulls the, you know, Death Knight troop that merges into his other ones. Again, nobody actually knows how auto chess works.
Let me dial this back a little bit because I do think we are going to alienate some of the audience because you can't watch auto chess because it's the most boring thing ever.
Right. That's the challenge as filmmakers.
Sure. Understood. Let me dial it back and suggest.
Right.
Chess.
Huh.
Just chess.
Okay.
But
I
think you can do it with the Steel Battalion controller with a series of intricate pulleys and levers moving the pieces.
Hmm.
And then we can bring Lawrence Fishburne in to teach Jimmy how to play.
You found the Searching for Bobby Fischer reference that made the last millennial fucking turn off the podcast for good. They're unfollowing on Spotify as we speak.
Please don't do that. Let me think. This is all shit so far. It's all fucking shit and it's all garbage.
Who's the wizard?
Could it be Billie Eilish?
Who's the wizard?
I mean, could it be Billie Eilish?
It can't also be Billie Eilish. She can't play
too
all
old
roles
to be the
guys. Hey, she. Lots of people play two roles in movies. It happens all the time. Adaptation. So before you come at me, there's all kinds of people.
What if you give me Jaden? Oh my, is he a little too old?
I think he's too old too.
What if it's Jaden and Will Smith is the one, his dad, and his dad is the one that kidnaps him, and then it's like really challenging.
But this is happy. Now we're doing this sort of pursuit of happiness.
But he's 25 at this point.
But with gaming, right. Yeah,
it's like 35 years old. I mean, I don't want to just get Jacob Tremblay. I'm sure he's.
I was
going to
say, what's that kid from Room doing, Jacob Tremblay?
I can't just get Jacob. That's like the most boring. Like, who cares?
What about,
you know what I mean? Like,
fucking Timothy Chalamet?
Yes, Timothy Chalamet will use the Frodo technology to make him seem much smaller.
Listen, guys,
that's done. Gonna that's
fucking,
done.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna Irishman Timmy Chalamet. Don't worry about that. Timmy Chalamet's in the picture. He is 10 years old.
And he is also using the same Irishman technology, aged, to be his own older brother.
Oh,
that's double the Timmy. And under the credits, it'll say Timothy Chalamet as the older brother.
Right. Yeah.
Lil Timmy Chalamet as the wizard.
Right.
The titular wizard.
With Billie Eilish as Ginny Lewis. This is all fucking great. We got Alf as Beau Bridges. Guys, the picture's cast. It's all done. We got to figure out is what's the final game? What's the final confrontation? Maybe it's Super Mario Brothers 4.
They haven't done that one yet.
They haven't done Super Mario Brothers 4. And barring that, if Nintendo won't let us do that, we just get like one of those like super fucking funny, like super violent Newgrounds Flash games with Mario in it where like he kills a Yoshi.
And there's all butts.
Yeah. It has, anyway.
Let me ask you. So if Mario 2 was a dream, Mario 3 was a play, what would be the setup for Mario 4 to really set itself apart?
Now we have to design Mario 4.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's hard. We may be putting too much work into this, right? Because
porn parody. It's a porn parody. Super Mario Brothers 4 is a video game in the Mario Brothers universe, but it is framed as a porn parody of Super Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers. The gameplay is still good.
The same.
It's the same as Super Mario Brothers 3?
It hasn't
exactly
changed.
Exactly. Okay. It's a tile swap, baby. It's 2020. We got to make our ducats somehow.
So the pipes are just dicks.
The pipes are just dicks.
We're going to get in trouble if we do that with the Motion Picture Association.
You think?
Listen, we've cracked this, right? We've got it. Let's move on to anything else. We asked you for your most beloved Super Mario Brothers memories in general. Chase says the first Mario Brothers game that I really remember playing in earnest was Super Mario World on SNES. Never mind, too young. Stop listening. You're not listening. Actually, we clarified this. You're no longer there.
As soon as they heard Beau Bridges,
God. Charlie says, I'm sending this email right after listening to your last episode because the timing of what just happened to me was perfect. As soon as I heard you guys were going to be talking about Super Mario Brothers 3, I happened to pick up my bean juice. Okay. You're just talking about. Charlie has a Super Mario Brothers 3 coaster. That's the anecdote that prompted Charlie to write in. Thank you.
I want one.
Alec, my earliest Mario memory, I remember waking up Christmas morning and being led from the living room to downstairs with a piece of string. There on the big TV we had, there was Super Mario Brothers 64. That's your earliest? Next email from a grown-up. James says, my first Super Mario Brothers memory is the invention of the five-year-old brain or a fever dream, but I swear I remember a friend's older brother getting to Bowser on 8-4 in the original SMB, and he was the size of the screen, burning red, and tossing hammers everywhere. Fantastic. Let's see what's on Twitter. Cookie says, 92, I babysat for these kids that would play it and crush me, and they mocked me for my bad jump after jump. I still can't really do the platformers to this day. The music in 1-2 is pure anxiety fuel to me.
Quick side anecdote from you two. I'm curious about this. Do you guys have a very like firmed up memory of like a babysitting game? Like a game that you played when you were being babysat I guess that's it. When you were young and you were being babysat, and then there's like a game that you played then. For whatever reason, like, I have Little Nemo. Like, remember that. And I think it's because we played it over, like, several... I used to be babysat with my friend Patrick. We would go over to his house and had the same babysitter. And we'd just play Little Nemo, like, for for like many, many sessions. And that is just like crystallized. That's the babysitting game in my mind. And I didn't know if that those two things were like necessarily tied together or not.
The only thing that jumps to mind was not so much babysitting as visiting my grandparents in California and to bond with me. They would like get us a computer game while we were there for the weeks that my brother and I could play. And we played Wolfenstein 3D. Which they made us drop the volume on because their cleaning lady was German and she would hear all the very violent German screams.
Really?
I was very young.
Yeah.
It was not an appropriate piece of content for me.
Yeah.
They didn't really try.
My parents would always rent a game from Cummings Rent a Center or the Farmore when they were like going on a date. We were being left with a babysitter. And the one that I have the clearest memory of playing was Rescue the Embassy Mission. Y'all ever fire that one up?
No. What?
Rescue the Embassy Mission. It's an NES game. Fucking go play it. It's wild. It's a tactical shooter where you start off like side scrolling and you're like, there's searchlights looking out for you and you're like hiding in door jams and ducking behind shit. And then after that, there's a like sniper view of you like looking through windows trying to take out bad guys in the embassy. And then you flash back to like yet a third mode that's sort of like Friday the 13th, if you remember that one. And you're going room to room looking for terrorists. And hopefully your sniper buddy has eliminated some of them and trying to rescue people from the embassy. It's fucking
wild.
It was
also called Hostages in Europe.
The box.
Because everyone wants to buy a game called Hostages.
The fucking yeah. box art of this game has sent me on a complete like memory dive of like this guy smashing in through a window and this dude in a red balaclava looking at him like he's a fucking ghost, like he's a mummy that has just smashed through the wall. Like, what a good game.
Y'all been playing anything else?
Yeah, so I've been, I know Griffin mentioned it a few weeks ago, but I jumped into Bloodstained on Switch, which is really terrific. You know, I wish it ran a little bit better, but it's very playable.
It's leaps and bounds above where it was when it first launched.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got bumped off of it when it first launched because it was a mess, super playable, totally tapping into that like GBA DS era Castlevania game for me because it's made by the same dude, and I've just been like super super hooked on it and can't seem to put it down. I was up until like 1 a.m. last night doing dumb shit in that game, so it's highly recommended.
Mine's embarrassing, but I saw like a post on Reddit or something about the Dragonborn DLC for Skyrim, and I realized yeah. I as much as I've played Skyrim, and it's a lot, I never really played the DLC. I never really played Dawnguard or Dragonborn, and I hadn't really like played a ton on Switch either, so I like picked it back up. I've been enjoying it. I've nearly done with the Dawnguard DLC, and it's neat. I think like I play that game for the memes like so much that actually playing it like a game is a is a unique experience. But
Dawnguard's not in my memory, not super great, but Dragon,
it's not. It hasn't been very good. But I've heard really good stuff about Dragonborn, so I am excited to get going. And I like the build that I'm playing this time. It's been a while since I've like actually given Skyrim the old college try, and it's nearly 10 years old, which is fucked up.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Juice, you play anything?
You know what? Charlie and I just finished Later Alligator, which is like a very, I'm always looking for stuff that will like engage kids, but is not like contemptible. Later Alligator is great. It's just you, if you're not familiar, it's basically like a very light adventure game. Even adventure game is stretching the bounds of that, but you're in an alligator, a city of alligators. You're hired by an alligator that worries his family is going to kill him, and you start traveling around the town talking to the different alligators, trying to find out more about the
event. His like children?
He's like the sort of runt of the family, and he's worried they're going to kill him because he's extremely skittish. Becomes almost immediately apparent that they're planning a birthday party for him. So it's just you traveling around town asking other alligators for hints about the event, as it's called. And before they'll give you the hint, you have to play a little mini game for them. And it's all very like cute and fun and sweet. And it's got a great aesthetic and really great music. I think Giant Bomb had it on their like best soundtracks or top three anyway. It's really fun, especially if you like to do fun voices for all the different alligators. It's really cute and has a great sense of humor, and it's really sweet.
Oh, where, what platform is it on?
I played it on Steam, so there.
So we have to go see Sonic Hedgehog. We have to go see Sonic Hedgehog for our job.
Yep, our job is to go see Sonic Hedgehog.
We have to
every
see that.
Every fiber of my being was praying I got a screening invite to this movie just so I wouldn't have to fork over the $12.50. I think I'm going to go at 8 a.m. on a Tuesday.
So when I take Henry to movies, I do it with the understanding that I may have to just like walk out of that movie at any point and just kind of go with God with that. Like we saw Detective Pikachu and we saw Toy Story 4. And he's been pretty fucking ride or die for like all the movies we've taken him to. But I have to go into Sonic with that. I'm going to take him. Because I can't do it alone, and Rachel's not going to do it with me.
Yeah, I don't have a choice.
So I'm facing a reality where I get, fuck, guys, 70 minutes into Sonic Hedgehog, and then my son freaks out, and we have to leave, and then I have to go see it again.
Yeah, pay for it twice. But that will be next week. If you want to email us, I don't want to hear about your relationship with Sonic the Hedgehog. This is the only human mind I have, and I can't open myself up to that. But I would like to hear your reviews of the Sonic Hedgehog movie when you go see it.
I don't want any emails from people who didn't go see Sonic Hedgehog.
No, we're a family, and family in this case means people who've seen the Sonic Hedgehog movie. So please email us. That's mail@besties.fan. Besties.fan is also where you can listen to our show and share it with other people. And we would love it if you would do that. And also, if you would be kind enough to follow us on Spotify, that would be just peaches.
There's a little button at the top of the Spotify page. Click that follow button and you're golden. At the very least, it'll put new episodes of the Besties on your homepage when they drop on Fridays. Not quite a push subscription, but we're working for it.
We're working on it. Follow us on Twitter, The Besties Pod. Mm-hmm. We put out little clip videos of each episode. If you share those, it's like a huge help for us. And we appreciate y'all.
That is going to do it for us, folks. So until next time, be sure to join us again next week for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter, and our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!